Cole, what's up, man? Ladies and gents, boys and girls, appreciate you all tuning in. We are SEC Unfiltered here on the SEC Unfiltered Hour on the Texas Sports Unfiltered platform. Of course, I'm Chris Phillips. He is Cole Thompson. Be sure to check us out everywhere you get your content, whether it's YouTube, it's podcasts, it's social media, our website as well, secunfiltered.com. And what I was going to say, of course, it's not the first time you've met Cole Thompson and certainly not the first time you've met me. First time Cole and I have been on the airwaves together, but Cole, you are the Energizer Bunny of SEC Unfiltered, I feel like, and I say that as nothing short of a compliment, my friend. So what's going on, man? This has been a long time coming. We have not been on the airwaves yet in any capacity together.
We haven't, and it's kind of interesting. You know, you hired me, and I was like, oh, man, I'm going to be working alongside C-Money, and then it's like, no, you got to do your own thing because, you know, your energy levels is basically like having a shot of espresso mixed in with morphine, mixed in with adrenaline. You know, it's definitely like you just need to go run. Like people, can, you know, people say all the time, the people match their dogs. I have a border collie. Border collies are known for having crazy energy. It's like, oh, they found each other and it was a perfect blend. So I'm excited to be on with you, buddy. You know, we've talked about this a lot. I think that, you know, we got some fun stuff planned this week where we're doing a little bit of collaboration with our other buddy, Dave. If you don't know Dave, go check him out at Mock Sports 10. He's great. Or Mock 10 Sports. My apologies. But yeah, you know, it's a fun day. We just talked about Lenore Sellers getting the starting job at South Carolina. That was a fun video to make. I'm excited for South Carolina fans. I know that you got to be excited because you are very much involved with that team. Just the fact of being able to have stability going into the summer months, that's, I think, a major win for Shane Beamer in what feels like a pivotal year. And then we got to talk about the SEC. And we saw FanDuel release the odds today for Heisman Trophy. We saw FanDuel release the odds for the start of the year. This is going to be a really interesting season in the SEC. And though Texas is joining, they're pulling their chair up to the big boy table. They're not going past the bouncer. They don't even need to worry about getting ID. Everyone's just like, oh, you're Texas. Go ahead. You get to have a VIP selection. Here, do you want a free bottle while you're at it?
And we got a fun show lined up for sure. And Cole, to your point, we're going to be doing a lot of collaboration content as we get closer to the college football season as well. Certainly we get in the season. Going to be all kinds of previews, predictions, reactions, all that good stuff. And again, so you'll see me, Cole, Dave, all of us together doing different stuff. And as we continue to grow our team, you might see some others as well. But like you mentioned, Cole, got a great show today. Again, guys, leave us your comments. Leave us your questions. Everything in the chat will feature those. Appreciate you all tuning in. We got a great audience tuning in today. And as Cole mentioned, and we're going to start. And first, I'll say this, by the way, Cole, to your point, because I don't want to ignore it. The big news in the SEC of the last 24 hours, South Carolina names their starting quarterback. Really quickly on this, because it wasn't a surprise. I think maybe those outside of Columbia may have thought there was more of a competition than there really was. Lenore Sellers, it's been known since last year, right? When he got on campus and you heard the reports coming out of practice, you saw him get some game time last year. Granted, against Furman and Vanderbilt, late in the season against Kentucky, he also saw the field, but you knew he was going to be the dude. I think it's one of those things, Cole, obviously. You bring in a guy like Robbie Ashford to boost the room and give yourself some competition because outside of that, you have a true freshman in Dante Reno. You got Luke Doty, who's back, who's splitting time between quarterback and wide receiver. You know, realistically, it was just Sellers, so you wanted somebody else to push him. They tried to get A.J. Swan, who ended up going to LSU. So you bring in Robbie Ashford. You want to present, obviously, there's competition in the room. It's a battle, if you will. But I do agree with you, Cole. And it's a balancing act because you don't want to name the starter too early and have your backup hit the portal, but you don't want to announce it too late. I think there's a lot of value in having a guy. You get to spend the entire summer and preseason knowing you are QB1. Like, there's just a different, you know, you still approach things with intensity, but let's call it what it is. There's a different type of mentality. There's a different approach when you know, hey, this is my football team. This is my team. I'm QB1. And so I thought it was the no-brainer move. I thought it was the obvious move. It was a matter of when, not if, Shane Beamer was going to name Lenore Sellers the starter. So wasn't really a surprise on my end.
What I will say that's really important here is that as somebody that got to cover Texas A&M in person every single day for 2 years, I remember right after Kellen Mond left, there was the conversation of, what do we do at quarterback? We have two young guys that are coming in. We like both of them, and Haynes King and Zach Calzada. And all the way up until it was literally, I think, the Thursday before Texas State in 2021, they didn't announce a starter. And everyone said it was because of, well, the competition's so good. The competition's so good. And you're allowed certain number of minutes to be out there on the practice field and see what's going on behind closed circuits. But usually a lot of the game prep is not when you have cameras around. So you just hear that Haynes King wins the starting job. Haynes King gets hurt in week two. Zach Calzada comes in. It is a giant hit and miss. You know, you watch him deliver 30-yard piss missiles down the field like it's no one's business. And then the 10-yard slants, he's throwing them in like they're 90-mile fastballs. And you're like, dude, slow it down. You need to have some consistency. Well, it's the same thing the next year. Calzada transfers. You keep Haynes King. You bring in Max Johnson. Same thing. Well, who's going to win the starting job? King wins the job. Johnson comes in. Johnson then gets hurt. You got to go back to King. It's not that great. Then this year, it's Wegman versus Johnson. This year was a clear cut. Connor's going to be the starter. It was a kind of a good deal. And you notice that this year, when you watch Texas A&M, their main issue was not having a number one receiver. But I look, there was a lot more positivity with this team knowing that Wegman was going into the year as a starter and having that adaptability to know this is where our offense has to cater to our strengths and our weaknesses, and you build around it. And I'm glad that you brought up AJ Swan, because we actually did a video. One of my first videos I did for you was talking about the quarterback competition in LSU. It's good to have a quality backup and somebody that you can trust in certain formations if you have to go to the other situation. And that's where you look at a team like Texas. That's where you look at teams like Oregon, where you don't want to go to Arch Manning right now. You don't want to go to Dante Moore right now. But if you had to, you feel confident in it. But going into the regular season, going into the summer months, you can predicate your offense on what is going to stand out with this player. And Lenore Sellers, we know what he can do. He can boot, scoot, and boogie like Brooks and Dunn in the open field. He's got a cannon of an arm, 6'4", 245 pounds, got a little bit of Josh Allen to him. He can tuck and run it. That's a quarterback that you now know in Dow Loggins' pro-style offense, we got to cater to his strengths. We also got to get prepared to run our certain brand of football if we want to be successful in Columbia.
And to your point, Cole, you can never have too many good quarterbacks. Especially when you have a guy like Sellers who, you know, I think it's fair to assume he's going to run quite a bit. He's going to be a young guy, right? I think we saw it in the spring game, and I know it was just a spring game, but I think there's going to be some taking off after the first read's not open. They're probably going to have to coach out of him, and I think he's going to eventually get out of himself. That's just something that comes along as you gain experience and confidence. But when you have a running quarterback, what I'm trying to say is all it takes is one play, and you're going to the next man up, right? If something happens, he gets dinged up, whether it's for a play, a series, a quarter, God forbid, a game, you have at least somewhat of a capable backup who can run your offense, who has experience with live bullets, right? Again, you talked about it with Swan at LSU. Robbie Ashford, he wasn't great at Auburn. Let's call it for what it is, no. But at least he has that experience. He could come in there and at least stabilize the ship if something were to happen. But, you know, I think Sellers at South Carolina, Cole, again, it wasn't surprising, if you will, to hear Shane Beamer. It was a matter of when, not if, like I said. My bigger questions for their football team, and again, like you mentioned, we have months to go. We're going to break this thing down, left, down, upright, sideways, you name it. We're going to break this thing down going into college football season for every single SEC team. For South Carolina, I think the questions are greater around him than they are with Sellers. He's going to have his normal, I think, freshman quarterback struggles, right, in regards to going on the road in the SEC, things maybe speeding up a bit, right? The passing game is where I wonder how much of a threat is he going to be. But the kid has natural raw ability. I think he's also going to make some plays that wow you. The bigger questions for South Carolina will be, what do they do around him? Is the offensive line improved? Can they get some support from the running game and Rocket Sanders? Who steps up at the wide receiver position as a true wide receiver one? So I think if they can answer those questions, most of those questions, they need to help out their young quarterback and not necessarily put it all on him.
We got a long show ahead, so I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I respect the hell out of Spencer Rattler, what he was able to do last year, especially after losing Juice Wells. There is no Xavier Leggett for you anymore. There is no Trey Knox for you anymore. You still have that same turnstile offensive line. So best of luck to you, Lenora Sellers. Best of luck to you, Shane Beamer. I am actually one of the pro Shane Beamer people probably in America. He is in my top five coaches I would run through a brick wall for. So I am rooting for him to have the most success possible, but we all know that right now, it is dark and gloomy in Columbia, and until we actually see results, it is not going to look any prettier.
Cole, let's first start again. Like you said, we got a lot to get into. Let's talk Heisman odds. We've got spreads that have come out, game lines from DraftKings, Heisman odds have been released from DraftKings. all types of gambling stuff. And I love to talk some gambling. I know you do as well. Heck, we all do, especially this early on. It's fun. It's the quote-unquote off-season, right? It's talking season. Just recently, DraftKings releasing their latest Heisman odds. Cole, I want to start with what I would call the favorites. And then what I thought was really entertaining, which we'll get into in a second, is the long shot odds. Like some of these guys, some guys that I were surprised to even see that they had odds. But first, the favorites to win, in my opinion, and these are strictly SEC guys. We can run through the rest, but Quinn Ewers at plus 900, Carson Beck at plus 900, Jalen Milroe at plus 1400, Jackson Dart at plus 1800, Nico from Tennessee at plus 2000, Garrett Nussmeier at plus 2000, Jackson Arnold from Oklahoma at plus 3000. So you notice, by the way, all quarterbacks. Connor Wegman at Texas A&M plus 3500, Brady Cook plus 3500. Then we got a couple non-quarterbacks, Trevor Etienne at plus 8,000, as well as Luther Burden at plus 8,000. From that initial list of SEC guys, your thoughts on those odds? Do you feel like there's some value there? Do you feel like some guys are overhyped, underhyped? Your thoughts on the favorites from the SEC to win the Heisman Trophy?
So, Chris, you were one of my favorite people in the world. We are on Texas Sports Unfiltered. I'm making this clear right now. There is one UT here, and it is the one in Austin on the 40 acre. It is not the place in Knoxville. It is a beautiful location. It is a safe haven of mine. I love Tennessee. I love
the real UT is in Austin.
The real UT is in Austin. We claim that here in this state. We claim that here around this money, and we're going to make sure of it. You know, for me, what's really interesting is Jackson Dart is below Jalen Milroe. Because pound for pound, the way that I view the quarterback position and the way that I view the Heisman odds, it's not just only about where you reside in terms of your play style, but also the supporting cast around you. You go back and you look at last season with Jaden Daniels. He wins the Heisman Trophy. I believe clear as day, that was your front runner. He had to walk away victorious because if he set a record in college football, he easily is one of a handful of players that can claim I threw for 3,500 yards, and I rushed for 1,000 yards in that season. But, much like Joe Burrow, but much like Kyler Murray, but much like a bunch of other quarterbacks, the supporting cast around them was phenomenal. It was. Brian Thomas Jr., first-round pick. You added Malik Nabers, top 10 pick. You had a good run game. You had a great offensive line. I look at Ole Miss right now. I see the potential of where Jackson Dart is not going to garner a lot of first-round buzz. You know, if you look at rotoballer.com right now, he has the six best odds to be the number one quarterback. So, I mean, the number one pick in the 2025 NFL draft. I think that's a load of crap. I do. I think that there are a lot of limitations to his game that won't transpire to the NFL the same way it will for Jaden Daniels, the same way it will for Drake May, the same way it will for a bunch of other quarterbacks that are also on this list. But to me, you look at that passing attack. Where is the flaw? Where is the flaw in Oxford right now when we talk about the weaponry? Because if even when you want to talk about the rushing attack, yeah, you lose Quinshon Judkins, but number one, that's going to force you to pass the ball, I think, a little bit more. And number two, you're going to trust a running back by committee. I absolutely loved that Ole Miss brought back Henry Parrish Jr. and that you hear the way that Kevin Smith has talked about him for years on end. There is just this trust factor between Lane Kiffin and the portal and certain coaches that he says, I want this player. Okay, go get him. We want him back in here. Well, then you look at the passing game. Trey Harris has a shot of winning the Biletnikoff without question. Juice Wells is a former 1,000-yard receiver with Spencer Rattler, who I think Jackson Dart can emulate similar results, maybe even a little bit higher, during his time in Columbia. You have Caden Priestcorn. When he was healthy, one of the better tight ends in the SEC. Then you also still have Jordan Watkins that does not get brought up enough as a quality number two or number three. You also still have a lot of young talent on this team, and you're going to have a better, sturdy offensive line that's a little bit more seasoned. I look at Alabama. I know they brought over Jeremy Bernard. I love Jeremy Bernard. I remember watching him when he was in high school and then seeing him go to Michigan State. I thought, okay, immediately plug and play. He's going to be a great addition to the Spartans. Ends up leaving, goes to Washington, ends up leaving because of the transfer portal opened back up because his coach left. He went down to Alabama. I think he has a shot at being a number one. Who's the number two? Where do you see that quality second guy? I know right now that Jalen Milroe has the ability to tuck it and run and be an effective open field playmaker. But I also know that Jackson Dart can be mobile enough to maneuver outside the pocket, deliver quick, clean strikes, and also still be an elusive playmaker that evades pressure and keeps drives alive. I think Jackson Dart should be a little bit higher. I really do. I completely understand where you talk about other quarterbacks, Carson Beck. They have a cornucopia of talent right now in Athens. Like name the last time that we've ever had a conversation where Georgia got better via the transfer portal, but they did. Like, that's the way you got to view Georgia this year. So their passing attack, yeah, they don't have elite weapons like Ladd McConkey and Brock Bowers, but they made up for it in terms of quantity. Somebody's going to step up. I look at also Brady Cook. Brady Cook has that relationship right now with Luther Burden and Theo Weiss that is just in sympathy. And I love the addition of Marcus Carroll. I know that Cody Schrader, the part that really bothers me when it comes to Missouri and the only thing that keeps me off of their radar is the, I think, heart and persona that Schrader embarked in that offense. But in terms of production, I think Marcus Carroll can put up the exact same numbers. They rebuilt that offensive line. They still have Kirby Moore there. I feel like those guys should have a shot to be right alongside Jalen Milroe because of it is an individual award, but those that have the best supporting cast around them, those are the ones that end up usually walking away feeling a lot better about the award.
And I think I agree with you, by the way. I think Jackson Dart should be ahead of Jalen Milroe. It is surprising to me to see him at plus 1,400, Dart at plus 1,800. I don't know if it's the Alabama effect still or what it is. And I'm not saying Jalen Milroe is a bad player, obviously, but again, we're talking Heisman Trophy. Ewers and Beck at the top, obviously, I think would make a ton of sense. I think normally, like I think of the Heisman Trophy, it's typically the best quarterback on the best team in America. Quinn Ewers, Carson Beck, they are going to be some of the best quarterbacks on the best team in America. And I think Quinn Ewers especially, I think if they come in, make the type of splash in the SEC, I think we expect. You know, I think too, having that brand, that personal brand, that personality, that pizzazz kind of helps, like being a noteworthy guy. That's why I think a guy like Brady Cook, it would be very difficult for him to win because he's just kind of this under-the-radar guy. I mean, even Graham Mertz went under the radar, which I'm not saying he's a Heisman Trophy favorite, but I mean, a guy that was really, really good last year that you still, you know, he's not getting a lot of the credit, a lot of the chatter in this offseason or this preseason, if you will. So I tell you, man, it's hard for me when I'm talking value and from this initial list, it's hard not to go with Nico. Just again, that is a, when you talk about building a Heisman campaign, he's already got the branding there. I think that helps. I think also though, being in Josh Heupel's system, like they're loaded on the offensive side. He's going to put up big time numbers. If Tennessee is a 10-2 or God forbid 11-1 type of team, I think Nico is going to be right in the mix in a Heisman Trophy. Also Garrett Nussmeier, because they're going to have to score. I think the defense is probably still going to be an eyesore. So I think Nussmeier for sure. Connor Wegman at plus 3,500, man. We're going to get in this in a second when we get to the game lines. I've been saying, Cole, and this is, again, a program you're very familiar with in Texas A&M, but I've been saying for months, I just think it's fascinating. It's like, why can't we allow Texas A&M to overachieve? And we can't do it. Like, Vegas can't do it because, again, we're going to get in the spreads. Connor Wegman's got Heisman odds that, I mean, I think when healthy, he is definitely a top half of the league quarterback. But I thought that one was interesting, putting Wegman ahead of a couple of the other guys on this list.
So real fast, when it comes to Texas, the thing that really stands out is that I've brought this up multiple times on the show. I brought this up multiple times on SEC Unfiltered. By the way, if you haven't checked us out, go check us out at secunfiltered.com. It's the number one source for all SEC's football. But I look at this overall receiving room. It's so unknown, but there's so much speed. You can't overthrow anybody. Like Quinn Ewers is not going to be able to overthrow a single playmaker. We haven't even seen Silas Bolden show up just yet. And that guy might end up a year from now beating Xavier Worthy's 40 record. Like, that's how fast he is. But Wegman, what really stands out to me when it comes to Texas A&M is they remind me so much of the Dallas Cowboys with their fan base. And what I mean by that is they'll put the wagon before the horse when the season begins. We did a video a couple days ago, literally talking about, can they at A&M actually be a dark horse? And a lot of the comments is, haven't we heard this for the last 4 years? No, we haven't. You want to know why? Because in 2021, you start off as the preseason number 16. That's not a dark horse. In 2022, you start off as the preseason number 17. That's not a dark horse. In 2019, you start off as the preseason number 12 team. That's not a dark horse. A dark horse means no odds, no expectations. Mike Elko, who honestly was the glue that held the Jimbo Fisher regime together, because you look at the numbers after Elko left for Durham, he's coming back. That's great. But now it is a dark horse because of nobody knows who is the number one receiver with Anaya Smith out. Nobody knows what this rushing attack in the offensive line is going to look like because of they have great running backs in Le'Veon Moss, and they also bring back Amari Daniels and Ruben Owens. They bring over Adam Cushing, who just turned Graham Barton into a first-round pick at Duke. So there is reason to believe it, but A&M fans, for years underneath Jimbo, because of what they had and because they showed up with the red carpet donned out from Tallahassee, and they gave him a plaque that said, insert year 20-something national championship, now we make fun of them. It's just like the Dallas Cowboys. And I'm not saying that Cowboys fans don't deserve a little bit of garneration, but sometimes just know your place. You haven't been to the NFC Championship game in over three decades. 1995 was the last time that you were even in the championship. Yet here you are, year in and year out, talking like you're ready to take control. We all know that the year that Jerry Jones starts looking up at you when you win the Lombardi Trophy, straight down from the fiery pits that we all know and love and we hope that we avoid, we know that that's the year that you'll get it because he sold his soul to the devil to be able to get it back in the 90s. So the same thing for Texas A&M. I think the reason why we don't look at Connor Wegman, we don't look at the Aggies right now as that team that can overachieve is because of we've thought that they could for years, years and years and years. We thought, well, they have a top three defense. Well, they have a great secondary. Well, they have a great rushing attack. Well, they have a good offensive line. They have an All-American at left tackle. They have a premier All-SEC center. And they went 8-4. And they went 9-3. And they went 8-4. They've had one double-digit win season since joining the SEC in 2012. Missouri, the team that was the leftovers, like, oh, somebody's got to join them. Let's throw a dartboard. Oh, Missouri, look at them. They want to lead the Big 12. Have been to more SEC championships than Texas A&M, and they went after A&M that year because they wanted to have the Texas culture in the SEC. They wanted that branding. They wanted to be able to have that gusto. And you can go ahead and say, well, the East versus the West, the East versus the... When Missouri went in 2013, they beat six ranked opponents to get to Atlanta to face off against Auburn, including top 10 matchups against Georgia, against South Carolina, and against Ole Miss. And they also beat Texas A&M that year with the reigning Heisman Trophy winner and Johnny Manziel. So it's not that I don't think that you look at Texas A&M and say they can't overachieve. I think Connor Wegman, what we've seen of him in the spurts of nine games... is phenomenal. But the questions that I have right now when it comes to this team, how well does this offense quickly adapt underneath Colin Klein? How quickly does Wegman adapt coming back from the injury? And also, who steps up as a number one receiver? I can point out a number one receiver in Knoxville. I can point out a number one receiver or at least a potential number one receiver in Athens. I can do it in Austin. I can do it in Oxford. I could do it in LSU. I could do it in Baton Rouge if I need to. I don't know if I can do it in College Station just yet. And until I do, it's a little hard and it's a little treacherous for me to cross that pathway.
A&M is like that team. You just can't help yourself. Right. People just can't help themselves, right? Again, we're going to get into the spreads. I think it's going to echo this, but just can't help yourself. And I just, you know, for the good people, and I know we're on Texas Sports Unfiltered, so I say the good people of College Station, but for those folks, it's just sometimes it's okay to just let your program overachieve every once in a while. Hard to do that if you got expectations of double-digit wins, but that's how they like it. Talking to the folks on Tech Sags and folks in there in College Station, they like it. That's the expectations they want. So,
but before we move on, I just want to say, if there is one receiver that I am betting on for Heisman odds this year, it is Luther Burden.
We talked about that yesterday. Yeah,
and the only reason why is because you remember back in 2020 when you saw DeVonta Smith win it.
Yeah.
He won it because of, unfortunately, and it was the worst feeling alive as an Alabama grad, but knowing that they ended up winning the national championship still, it was a one-dimension offense. Whenever they went to pass, it had to go to number six. So let's just say Theo Weiss Jr. was to miss several games, and Luther Burden, who is, in my opinion, the top receiver coming into this year, regardless of conference, regardless of division, regardless of level of play, he's the top receiver for me. And let's just say he has to take over games. And he's averaging 129 yards per 29 yards per game, two touchdowns. If DeVonta Smith can do that, and he could set records, and Luther Burden can do that, and last year we had to see where a wide receiver that was highly touted and popular, which is a major deal here, because Marvin Harrison Jr. as a Biletnikoff Award voter, I love Marvin Harrison Jr., but I had Malik Nabers far and away. I thought Malik Nabers top to bottom and Rome Odunze were better receivers last year. If that persona in Missouri carries over to Columbia, from Columbia to New York City, that's the one receiver I would bet on. And I do understand the reason why his odds are so low. It's almost impossible for it to not be a quarterback award. But at the same time, this is the one player that I am willing to say, if I can see them make it to the Big Apple, I think that's an accomplishment enough.
And it's interesting to think, Cole, if Luther Burden goes to New York, does Brady Cook go with him? I mean, that's, you know, because
Mac Jones went.
He'll be getting the credit for the passing touchdowns, obviously. And Luther Burden, I think you could argue the best returning wide receiver in the SEC. Nobody would bat an eye. Some really fun Heisman odds, Cole, before we finish up here. The long shot odds is what I call them. I'm going to start with this one because, of course, we're on Texas Sports Unfiltered. Arch Manning, plus 10,000. What would, you know, we obviously want to see Quinn Ewers start to finish. No injuries, obviously, so fingers crossed. That's the only scenario where I could see Arch Manning being in the conversation, because he's not going to play enough otherwise, and I'm just not buying, because of a big spring game, that this notion that maybe Arch Manning is going to take over as QB1. I'm just not buying that.
No, you shouldn't. Well, okay, here's the story, and sometimes I think Texas fans maybe don't understand this, and sometimes I think that people from the outside don't understand this. The Mannings are their own special breed of people. They really are. And I say that as kindly as possible. They're NFL royalty. They're college football royalty. They're really SEC royalty as well. But they didn't go to certain schools because of they love the ambiance. They love the atmosphere. They love the culture. They love the brand. They went for one person, David Cutcliffe. David Cutcliffe was able to convince Peyton Manning to snub LSU, his hometown team, and to snub Ole Miss to come to Knoxville. What happened? Well, he was a Heisman finalist, and he was able to go ahead and be the number one overall pick. Then, just because of Archie went there, it didn't mean anything for Eli. Eli goes to Oxford because of David Cutcliffe, because Cutcliffe is the head coach. And what happens there? He becomes a Heisman finalist. He becomes the number one overall pick. And lo and behold, it's the same thing with Sark. Sometimes relationships carry more weight than anything else. And so when you look at the Manning family, with the way that everyone else handled going through the process of getting starting reps, the blessing is Steve Sarkisian being in Austin. Because if, let's just say, out of curiosity, Sark got offered the job in place of Nick Saban, and they gave him an offer that he couldn't refuse, and overnight he goes back to Tuscaloosa. I think the first phone call you're seeing in the transfer portal is Arch Manning going to Tuscaloosa. And at that point, then Jalen Milroe maybe transfers. Maybe it's a whole new conversation, because if I do believe that relationship is so strong, it's still Quinn Ewers' team. Quinn Ewers, as of this point last year, led you to the college football playoff. He led you to the first Big 12 title since 2009. He was a throw away from taking you to a national championship. And I don't know what would have happened. Nobody knows what would have happened. There is a scenario. I don't know if you believe in this, Chris, or not, but I am. I am very big in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I believe in the multiverse. There is a world out there. There is another Earth, Earth 3000-9, where Texas gets the connection with Adonai Mitchell, they play in Houston, and they go up against Michigan. And what happens then? Are we even having this conversation? Is this a moot point? And I get it. The hype around Arch is really big. But bearing a season-ending injury, bearing something that completely unravels the team, Arch is not playing this year. And Arch is okay with that, and Sark is okay with that, and the Manning family is okay with that. So if the people that are making the decisions are all content with that, why is anybody else complaining about it? So I like the odds. If you want to throw down a little bit of money, go for it, because you can never say anything happens in this sport. It's unpredictable. But to me, it's one of those odds where it's just like, yeah, you're kind of throwing away chump change, bearing an injury, bearing something massively changing overnight.
It's basically like the casinos are just collecting money from the casuals who saw Arch Manning in the spring game. That's essentially what it is. So some of the other long shot odds that are really interesting. CJ Baxter from Texas is plus 8,000. Austin Mack plus 10,000. Graham Mertz plus 12,000. Talen Green from Arkansas plus 15,000. Brock Vandegrift, Kentucky's new starting quarterback, he's plus 15,000. How about AJ Swan, the backup quarterback at LSU's plus 15,000. How about Walker Howard, the backup at Ole Miss? He's plus 20,000.
That's too high in my opinion still. That's still too low.
Ty Simpson, the backup at Bama's plus 20,000. How about Peyton Thorne at plus 20,000? Jaden Rashada, who just transferred to Georgia, at plus 20,000. Jaden Blue is plus 20,000. Rocket Sanders at South Carolina plus 25,000. Blake Shapen, Mississippi State's new quarterback, plus 25,000. And Harold Perkins Jr., the LSU linebacker. He has the most long shot odds at plus 30,000. So, Cole, of that list of the super long shot odds, again, any of these would be a good pick because I don't think any of these are going to happen. But if you had to pick one, is there one that stands out to you that, you know, that you could justify in your own mind it making sense to throw a little jingle on them just in case, like you mentioned, it's college football, expect the unexpected, maybe something crazy happens. Is there a name that I mentioned that you could see happening?
So every single year I do this for my own show. I'm going to do this for us too. I will be a fan. I will be a bandwagon fan. And now that I have no more allegiance to covering Texas A&M on weekends, I'm a bandwagon fan. Sell me on why I should root for your team. And I will talk about you every single week and I will give you the praise. The team so far that has given me the most love, the most attention, the most absolute joy of the long shots. And I believe in him because he was a top five quarterback prospect. It's Brock Vandergriff. I think Kentucky right now is a really interesting team because we know three things. Number one, we know for a fact that this is going to be a year where potentially they get to 10 wins. Why? Because every 3 years, we watch Kentucky do some random voodoo magic crap, and they find a way to get to 10 wins, and Mark Stoops gets a brand new contract, and he has the easy... By the way, Mark Stoops has the best contract in all of college football. Do slightly above average, we'll pay you $7.5 million. Like,
Kentucky's a great job for that.
It is best job in all of college football.
I will say, though, what he's done at Kentucky, another subject for another day, wildly impressive, because when he got there, I mean, Kentucky was like Vandy, where it was like everybody in the SEC expected to check that one off. And what they've built, like, we've gotten to a point where 7-5 is a disappointing year. That's saying something.
Like the all-time winningest coach at Kentucky before Mark Stoops was Bear Bryant in the 1950s. That's saying something about Kentucky football, people. But not only that, they did a great job fixing their team in the transfer portal. I love the addition of Jamori Macklin from North Texas. That was one of the best receivers in Conference USA. Those who watch this program, who live in Denton, who know the Denton area, they know what the Mean Green was with him. They know how special of a talent he could be. I love what they're bringing back in terms of wide receiver. I think they have a good offensive line that can keep Brock Vandergriff upright. And you just watch that arm. I mean, like I said, there is a scenario out there. There is a multiverse out there where it's Carson Beck heading to Lexington because Brock Vandergriff beat him out last year. And you heard from Kirby Smart, and I do believe partially this is true, that there was a battle and there was a conversation where maybe they were going to let Brock actually start one game just to see what he would have been like. The highlights are out of this world. And when you see what the play calling could be, I think Bush Hammond is a really good fit for what Brock does well with the play action pass. That is a guy that I could actually see at least putting some money down on. Now, do I believe he's going to win it? No, not at all. Do I believe that Kentucky's going to get to 11 wins and be a college football playoff dark horse? Hell no. God, no. It's Kentucky. No, not in the first of the 12th year playoff. Maybe when we get to 24, we can have that conversation. But I would say of any of the guys that you just mentioned, Brock Vandergriff to me stands out. He nearly beat out Carson Beck last year. Carson Beck is one of the favorites. Imagine how different the world would be if we would just switch them around.
And he's got Berrion Brown and Dane Key to throw to. That is a really big piece of the puzzle. When I look at this, Cole, when I look at this, you know, I know a guy I'm not betting on. I'm looking at Peyton Thorne's name and just thinking to myself, there's absolutely no way you could convince me to waste whatever amount of money I would throw on him. Although he's going to have much improved skill positions around him. I think Cam Coleman's a freak. This isn't going to be my answer, Cole, but you know what's going to be really interesting? Again, we don't wish injury. Like, I want all these guys to stay healthy. But, like, I could see a scenario where if something happened to Carson Beck, Jaden Rashada all of a sudden. I mean, he's extremely talented. I could see a scenario in which he's all of a sudden the conversation takes over. You know, he basically gets handed the keys to a Ferrari. You know what I mean? Like that would be the situation Rashada would be in.
It's a good fit. The one thing I will say is that they did a great job putting themselves in a position to where, in case of anything, much like at Oregon, much like at Texas, they have to turn to their backup. They're in a really good spot. It's not a guy you want to start, but you feel comfortable if you have to start him for a game or two.
And I would love to see Jaden Rashada go up against Florida. That would be what a full circle moment that would be. The guy that I would probably say my long shot, I think I would just for fun go with Taylen Green and Bobby Petrino. That's one. Yeah, maybe the Hogs break off a 9-3 unexpectedly. maybe that's good enough to sneak into a playoff. And Taylen Green, he's a dual threat guy. You saw him make a couple big time passes in the spring game. Granted, I know it's a spring game, but to show the accuracy that he showed with the downfield passing game. And again, Bobby Petrino back in Fayetteville, he can stay away from the co-eds. We might be able to get something cooking. Hey, that's all
we're,
I'm just
we're gonna have to retire the joke if they go to 7-5 because of right. At that point, if they go nine and three, Bobby Petrino, full circle moment. We have to consider him for the Broyles Award. Like, like that's baffling. Is that a guy who took your team to a top five finish? You've never been able to get back there. You fired for just cause, which it was just cause. I mean, seriously, listen, we've all made mistakes from time to time. Don't lie about it. Just come clean. Be honest. You still would have maybe still been employed at Arkansas at this point. But like, if you do that with a brand new quarterback, a quarterback that you're changing up completely, but still has a little bit of gusto. And the one thing I will appreciate about Bobby, he caters to the quarterback's strengths. And he knows how to do it with every single quarterback. It doesn't matter if it's with Louisville. It doesn't matter if it's with Arkansas. It doesn't matter if it's with Lamar Jackson. Like, he caters to a quarterback's strengths. If you do this with Taylen Green, I mean, at what point are we saying, listen, we know you don't want to be a head coach anymore. But what if you did? Like this is just what if you did? We can hide all that. Just what we're going to do is we're going to hire 40-year-olds instead to work the front office instead of everyone else. It's going to be an old school, but at least you can go ahead and be a head coach again.
I think Bobby late in the season, especially if they're winning, should just kind of troll everybody and show up to a presser with a neck brace on, just like for old time's sake. I think that would be a fun move. I think that'd be a fun move. Everybody get a good laugh out of it. I want to highlight a couple comments here, Cole, before we go any further. Joe K. Cole, I was rooting for Mystic Dan after watching you on Friday. So there you go.
Boom.
I mean, again, I'm shocked it took me until yesterday and the guys here telling me that you called it. I'm surprised we did not get that in the group text. That's all I'm going to say.
I was probably just busy, honestly. I think I was too busy celebrating that
night.
You're
just too humble. You're too humble. I respect it. Too humble.
For now. Don't worry. It'll get there eventually.
Mark K says, how do y'all keep track of all the SEC programs? I'm on my phone way too much, honestly. No, I mean, I feel like we do a pretty good job of focusing on the really just top storylines day in day out. But it's one of those things where when you love it as much as we do, I think it just comes really naturally, really organically, just following along. You learn these guys' names, you learn about these teams. And we've been doing it for a really, 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 really long time as well.
Yeah.
So, because even if you're a fan of just one team, you're a fan of the sport, you watch all these different games, your team plays these other teams, and you learn about their teams. So just been doing it for a long time, Mark K. It is a lot, though, to your point. It is a lot, but we do our very best. So appreciate you taking notice.
I'm just sick. I just have no life, anything out there. You know, that's it. I don't know. That's good. I don't know many people that want to be paying attention to 2019 film of Mississippi State, but I'm one of those people. Like, I that's just it, man. You know, you fall in love with the sport, and then you go back, and instead of watching normal sports or finding a new television show that's out right now, no, you go watch game film from 2014 and see how the offenses differ. Like, we're just sick people.
We're a couple degenerates. Literally. Yeah. Speaking of degenerates, again, we're talking game spreads and lines in the month of May. But that's exactly what we're doing. Again, DraftKings releasing some notable spreads. Let's start first with Texas, Cole. We can kind of rapid fire because we had a lot to get into. Again, a lot of different teams have spreads. Let's start with Texas, though, because, of course, we're on Texas Sports Unfiltered. And just give me your quick thoughts. I'm going to list these off really quickly. The Texas lines that have been released, -3 at Michigan, -8.5 against Oklahoma, +1.5 against Georgia, -16.5 at Arkansas, and -4 at Texas A&M. Of those I mentioned, anything stand out to you?
The fact that it's +1.5 against Georgia, there's a reason for that. And I think that most Texas fans understand why. What's the game before? It's Red River.
Yeah.
And so that is a game where you feel like, yes, as good as you may perform in that, you may blow out. You may end up absolutely crushing Jackson Arnold. You may end up taking the voice and the love and the admiration out of Oklahoma fans. They may be ready to cry for the next 2 months because of how bad of a beatdown you gave them. But Georgia's not going to have a game like that the week before. They're going to have time to heal. They're going to have time to prosper. So that's a game where if Texas ends up winning back-to-back and they do so in emphatic fashion, you have to consider them as, if not the top team in the country, one of the top teams in the country. I think plus three against Michigan is really interesting. I thought the line would be a little bit higher. I know they have one of the
I love minus three. I love Texas to cover that. I love that.
No, it's baffling. And I get it. Listen, Mason Graham, in my opinion, is right up there with James Pierce as arguably the best defensive lineman in the country. And the fact that he is back is special. But they return two key elements offensively this year. Number one is Colson Loveland, and you're still going to be able to have a quarterback that can pass him. And number two is Donovan Edwards. And the one thing that I loved about Texas in the second wave of the portal, they got Bill Norton. And to me, Bill Norton, that's your T'Vondre Sweat replacement. You get a 340-plus pound defensive tackle at 6'6", who has a relationship with Johnny Nason, can come in and play that void. As long as you can get somebody to emulate the same role as Byron Murphy, you make this offense one-dimensional. I don't care that it's in Ann Arbor. I don't care that this game has all the implications of defending national championships. This is a team that is well-equipped to go and handle business against anybody. And if Michigan finds itself slipping and they don't build on the offensive side, I think Texas can run away with this. I love the minus three. I think that they can easily get to a touchdown lead, especially depending on what this line looks like moving into the regular season.
And looking at the rest, Cole, really quickly, I will say I might lean plus 8.5 in the Red River just because that rivalry is always so close. Been a couple blowouts, but if you look at the history, that game is typically close. The fact, really more so my bigger takeaway, plus 1.5 against Georgia, just thinking about the fact, again, reminding myself, we get Texas and Georgia this year in Austin. Yeah. That's going to be electric. I mean, really, truly. I think 16.5 at Arkansas is a lot. And I know it's going to sound like I'm like skeptical of Texas, but going into Fayetteville, I don't know. Like, I know Texas is way better than Arkansas, but that feels like a lot. And then with the way that Vegas loves A&M, which is where we're going to go to next, I am surprised that Texas is a 4-point favorite even. And that's a great segue, Cole, into Texas A&M's game lines from DraftKings.
Chris,
I just don't understand, Chris,
I am hammering, and everyone in the chat can go ahead and join me. We will all go ahead and have a nice bacon burger afterwards. We'll order some bacon flavored pizza. We'll get some bacon flavored wings. We'll make bacon flavored everything. Plus 16.5. I am hammering the minus 16 against the Hogs. They have no shot against Texas this year, in my opinion. No shot.
Say, hey, Sam Pittman, depending on how things go, Bobby Petrino may be the head coach.
He may be the head coach.
He may be the head coach. So Texas A&M, we'll jump to them. The literally seven of the eight, I believe it's, let's see, two, four, six. So seven. Six of the seven games released from DraftKings, Texas A&M is a favorite. They're minus two against Notre Dame. They're minus four at Florida. They're minus 11.5 against Arkansas. They're minus four against Missouri. I know the game is in College Station. They're minus four against Mizzou. They're minus three against LSU.
Yeah.
They're minus 3.5 at Auburn, plus four against Texas. Dude, I know, again, we just did a video you did on our SECU platform on Texas A&M being a sleeper. I don't think they're a sleeper at all. Like, Vegas thinks they're going to win 9 or 10 games, like, based off these lines.
The one game that bothers me, it bothers the crap out of me. It's the 11 point spread against Arkansas in Southwest Classic. That has been the closest game for years. That game, it doesn't matter.
Unexplainably close.
It is so stupidly, unexplainably close, and it has no reason for it ever, ever. There have been years where you have watched Arkansas go down to the wire as a 3-win team. And their best performance was against Texas A&M and AT&T Stadium. That game is so stupidly uncomparable to anything else in the rest of college football. I don't know what to say. I've been to that game for the last 4 years. I have seen it up close in person. I don't know how to comprehend what Texas A&M does in the second half to where either they blow it or they allow Arkansas to keep it close. That's a line that is stupid. Now, Missouri, many people know that
Mizzou is getting no respect, Cole. None.
They are. I'm saying this line.
They're getting no respect.
Listen, I get it. You lose Blake Baker. That's a big loss. That is a monumental loss. And I'm not saying that Corey Batoon from South Alabama can't come in and emulate what Kane Womack did when he was at South Alabama, because they did have a top 20 defense there. But still, you look at the way that this offensive line was completely rebuilt with guys like Marcus Bryant, with guys like Caden Green, with other players, with what you bring into Marcus Carroll at running back, with what you have at wide receiver, you bring back your starting tight end, you don't lose Kirby Moore. I get College Station is a hectic atmosphere. It literally, they tell you the first time you go in the press box, hey, you're going to shake. It's normal. Like this is very normal that the water is feeling like it's about ready to collapse on you. It's okay. It still is a really good Missouri team. It still is a top to bottom, very fluid Missouri team. And the reason why I say that A&M is a dark horse is kind of like the way I talk about Oklahoma. A lot of their games, in my opinion, are coin flips. You can easily see them walk away with the win. You can easily see them walk away with the loss. That's the way I view them. So that the Arkansas line, though, to me, just seeing this rivalry up close, the Southwest Classic, like Vegas. I'm sorry, you Bobby Petrino, I think, actually came up there when he was at UNLV just for a little bit, and he's like, here's the deal. We're gonna go ahead and we're gonna put ourselves with a +11 line. You're gonna let us have this one, okay? Good job. Don't make me come back here, buddy. Like, that's the way I feel about Bobby Petrino in that moment.
Same spread. I know the games are home and away, but same spread, -4 against Missouri and Florida. And those two teams aren't comparable, in my opinion. So it's just, and again, one's in the swamp, one's at home, but very interesting. Hey, I know it's tempting because we're on Texas Sports Unfiltered to lean one very specific way when I ask this question, but your immediate reaction, A&M +4 against Texas, which way would you lean right now? Again, it's way too early. We're going to have 12 weeks technically with buys of college football before we have to make picks in that game. But would you take Texas on the -4? Or do you think A&M is like the perfect underdog? Probably going to be a night game. Like, I mean, dude, and that's going to be the ticket of the season. Like, yeah. Kyle Field is going to be an electric atmosphere. Do you like the home dog there? Like, if you had to bet one way or the other, or do you like Texas to cover?
Okay. The way I view this.
They may not let you back on the show if you take
A&M. I say, the way I view this, A&M has been sitting and festering knowing that Justin Tucker ended their season in such dismay on their own court back in 2011 that this would feel like the one game that Mike Elko ends up walking away with like the biggest win of all and that everything gets backed out. But I go pound for pound. I think that Sark right now has this team so well prepared by that point, where they're either in line to make it to Atlanta their first year, or they need a statement win to guarantee that they are in the college football playoff. Because here's the good news, people. It's 12 teams. You no longer have to go to Atlanta. You no longer have to win your conference to be a playoff team. And the one thing that we know about Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti, they will take the ball and they will create their own little conference and they will do their own little thing and they'll make sure that they are well represented if they are not brought in with the right people. I think Texas walks away with the -4. I think right now it should be about a touchdown differential, and I would be okay with still taking Texas at -7. So I would take them at -4.
Yeah, I would take Texas as well. I don't think A&M is looking forward to playing Texas. I'll just put it that way. I don't think they are. Really quickly, Cole, we'll run through the rest of these. Just let me know which one you think is notable, because again, we knew we had a packed show today. We got about 10 minutes to go. Bama game lines, you got -7.5 at Wisconsin, +4.5 against Georgia. We know that's a night game in Tuscaloosa. -2 at Tennessee, -8.5 against Mizzou, +1 at LSU, -1.5 at Oklahoma, and -1.5 against Auburn. Which of those jumps out to you?
I think
-15 against Auburn. I got confused. -15 against Auburn. Yes, my bad.
I think the Tennessee line. I honestly am at +2, because here's what it's saying. As good as Nico Iamaliava is, that's how much they don't trust that secondary. And what was the reason why this was a shootout back in 2022? It was because both secondaries couldn't stop each other. Jalin Hyatt went off in that game. You watched as Bryce Young was able to throw for over 350 yards in that game. It was a Hendon Hooker Heisman type moment. I feel like the one thing that's held back Tennessee over the last 3 years has been its secondary. And I still feel like, as of right now, that's where the problem is.
So let's talk Auburn, Cole. +3 against Oklahoma, +24 at Georgia, +10 at Mizzou, +3.5 against Texas A&M, and +15 at Bama again. So they're an underdog in every single one of these lines that is dropped. That +3 against OU, man, that one's really tempting from the standpoint of weird things happen at Jordan-Hare, man. So I will not – Oklahoma, I don't know if they know what they're walking into when it comes to Jordan-Hare Stadium and just the – I swear that stadium's on an Indian burial ground, the way weird things happen there. thoughts? Any of those lines stand out to you when it comes to the Auburn Tigers?
So I've made the joke for about, I don't even know at this point, a dozen years that there was a shaman man that was dead, that was found dead in the middle of Auburn, Alabama, and they buried the stadium underneath him, and that his voodoo magic has reaped into the soil every time the Iron Bowl gets played, because the Iron Bowl is always a chaos shit show whenever it's at Jordan-Hare and it's a blowout at Alabama. I think the Alabama game, though, at plus 15 is really interesting, because that's going to be a game where I think Kalen DeBoer feels like right now he has to set a tone in year one. And what is he going to have the week before? The Oklahoma game. And I think that Oklahoma game is going to be really interesting, because if that might be a slip up where Alabama ends up falling apart because if they're so worried about that Auburn game, and then Auburn's going to be able to take advantage of those miscues. I think one of the biggest losses for Alabama this past year, one of the biggest losses for the SEC in the state of Texas was Cam Coleman, who was supposed to go to Texas A&M. Now he's going to Auburn. I think that opens up the passing attack. Listen, Auburn has not had a 1,000-yard receiver since Y2K, and they're going to be able to have two guys that can take off the top's defenses. How well does this defense look? The one question mark I have for Alabama right now going into this season is their secondary. They looked a little hit and miss at times, but it is a brand-new formation. They're not running the 3-4 like they did underneath Nick Saban, but still, it gives you a question mark. Who is going to be able to handle both Keandre Lambert-Smith, and who's going to be able to handle Cam Coleman?
The Iron Bowl going to be really interesting, obviously. Kalen DeBoer's first one. Notable Georgia lines, Cole, minus 13.5 against Clemson, minus 4.5 at Bama, minus 24 against Auburn, minus 1.5 at Texas, minus 22 against Florida, minus 7 at Ole Miss, minus 17.5 against Tennessee. I've been really surprised. A lot of people I saw on social media, they love that minus 7 at Ole Miss, which I can see it from the standpoint of, even with everything that Ole Miss did, like, they got shellacked last year. Like, is it really going to make that much of a difference? Like, it'll be a closer game for sure. Does it equate to Ole Miss beating Georgia? Probably not. Probably not. So
no.
when you hear those spreads, thoughts on what the dogs have and their spreads from DraftKings?
It's the Ole Miss line. It's 100% the Ole Miss line, because here's the thing. Lane came out right after the game and said, if we want to compete alongside Georgia, alongside Alabama, we got to be better in the trenches. And the one thing that people seem to always forget about, which is why I love old school football and I love defensive football, if you can win in the trenches, you have a shot. If you have a great quarterback, you have a shot. But if you can win in the trenches, protect your quarterback or get to the quarterback, you really have a great shot of winning a game. And you look at the names that were added, as good as adding in a Juice Wells, as adding in a Poo Paul, as adding in a multiple defensive backs are, the fact that they were able to go get Walter Nolan, the former number one defensive recruit, to get a guy like Princey Uiagalelei, to still be in the running to go get potentially Tyler Barron, who was a hop, skip, and a jump minute at Ole Miss before going to Louisville, so now I can go back to Ole Miss because it would be a transfer, not internally of the divisions or the conferences. And you also still have J.J. Pegues, and you also bring back Jared Ivey. It's really hard for me to go ahead and say that their defensive line did not get better. I still would lean Georgia, but I'd lean that it goes to a field goal matchup. I feel like that this is the best Ole Miss team that we are going to see in a hot minute, and it's why I think Ole Miss is as many people are saying, they're overrated. No, I think they're properly rated. I think they are a top 10 team going into the year, and I think it's really hard-pressed to argue with it.
College football playoff or bust, no doubt,
in after
this season. LSU, minus 6 against Southern Cal, minus 2.5 against Ole Miss, minus 5 against Oklahoma, minus 8 at Arkansas, plus 3 at Texas A&M, minus 1 versus Bama, and minus 5.5 at Florida. Your thoughts on the LSU lines, anything jump out there?
First one, minus 6 against USC. I think so. And the main reason why is because I love the addition of DeAnton Lynn. I thought that that was just straight highway robbery to steal literally a guy from Westwood and bring him on over to Pasadena. I thought that that was a great move for this team. But the other thing that really stands out, as good as this LSU offense can be, I have question marks on this LSU defense. I have question marks when it comes to their defensive line. I have question marks when it comes to their secondary. I have question marks when it comes to their back end. I think they could be a team that once again finds themselves top 10 offense, top 10 in scoring, top 10 in rushing, top 10 with a great quarterback that ends up being first round conversation buzz. But to me, what really stands out is that they also have the same type of offense right at USC. This could be a 56-55 game. Like, that could be the line. And then eventually we watch as LSU builds that defense. But -7 to begin the year, especially with DeAnton Lynn coming on over, to be able to work with that defensive line like he did at UCLA, a top 20 defense last year, it just feels a little too rich.
Yeah, I look at the LSU lines. To your point, I think that the over in that ball game is probably going to be the play.
Way got to go over with that one.
You know, I think -8 at Arkansas could be a little much, because I think with the defensive problems that LSU could have, I could see Bobby Petrino and company, Taylen Green. I think I could see them having their way. Also, -1 against Bama. Was talking to my good friend Blake Ruffino, AYS Sports this morning, LSU guy, and he said every time LSU's favored against Bama at home, they get their teeth kicked in. So if it follows that, it's surprising how much LSU has struggled against Bama in Baton Rouge. Cole, Ole Miss +2.5 at LSU, -6 against Oklahoma, +7 against Georgia, -6.5 at Florida. Your thoughts? That -6.5 at Florida, man. Come on.
Yeah.
Who are we fooling here with that game? Come on now.
If we're going to be completely real, we're saying that at that point, either Billy Napier was fired and they found a new coach that has just reinvigorated a spark in them, or we're just saying that Graham Mertz is going to be a Heisman Trophy winner. +2.5 against LSU. I get it. The game is in Tiger Stadium. I get it. It's probably going to be a night game.
I think they got to be banking on revenge factor.
They have to be. But still, if we're talking about this LSU team, I mean, we're talking about this Ole Miss team. Their offense is going to be so dynamic. We've already mentioned that we think that Jackson Dart can be higher odds than almost every other quarterback besides Quinn Ewers and Carson Beck because of his personal. I look at this defense. They're improved. I still look at Will Campbell as being a baseline for this offensive line at LSU. Besides that, I have question marks. Not a lot, but I still have question marks. This feels like a game where, even though, yeah, I get it, I do, I still would lean in favor of Ole Miss based off of personnel. That's just the way I view it right now.
Death Valley is going to be nasty that night.
Yeah.
Lane Kiffin's talked a lot of smack this offseason, man.
He's got to back it up.
LSU fans are pissed. They're pissed.
They deserve to be.
You get a bunch of drunk Cajuns there in Death Valley. It's going to be Ole Miss will earn that win. They will earn that win if they get it. That's
by the way, Chris, they start drinking at 11:30 the night before, leading up to 7:30 the next day. They are going to be very intoxicated and very boastful in that game.
Yeah, no doubt. Finally, guys, again, we've hit 5:00. We're going to mention this really quickly. The Oklahoma Sooners, their lines, which I'm surprised this one's included, -39.5 against Temple. That just seems really out there. They'd include that one. But it is -5 against Tennessee, -3 at Auburn, +8.5 against Texas, +6 at Ole Miss, +4 at Mizzou, +1.5 against Bama, +5 at LSU. So Oklahoma's the dog in a lot of games. I think, though, Cole, the fact they're favored against Tennessee, that surprises me a little bit.
See, it doesn't for me. Here's why.
Doesn't for you.
No, okay. It doesn't at all. Here's why. What's the one thing that you know about Jackson Arnold? He's got a cannon. What's the one thing you look at these wide receivers from Andrell Anthony, from Nick Anderson, from Deion Burks, who had a clinic in the spring game? They are vertical receivers. What was so special about that game in Knoxville against Alabama? Both teams, vertical passing attack, deep downfield, shot after shot after shot. Jalin Hyatt against DeMarco Hellman. Seriously, what are you doing, Pete Golding? You deserve to be fired on the tarmac that night for putting Hellman's against Jalin freaking Hyatt. But still, it's the fact that you have a vertical passing attack against a team that has struggled with the vertical passing attack. So to me, I don't worry about this line. What I worry about is how quickly Jackson Arnold can develop with the new in-helmet system, how quickly you're going to be able to scheme up certain formations to get him off balance. But if you can't get him off balance, I could actually see this being a slip up for Tennessee. This is one of the few games where I think Tennessee, you come into this feeling really confident, you end up walking away with a double-digit loss.
And I know I was just speaking, Cole, in closing on Missouri, how high we all are on them. I take it, though, Oklahoma +4 at Mizzou. They may not win, but I think that's going to be a really close game. I think it's going to be a lot of emotions in that game after Caden Green goes to Mizzou, and there's just been a lot of jawing back and forth. I think they're going to get Oklahoma's best shot. I really know the game's in Como, but I think it's going to be a close game.
High animosity game. This is up there with what people, I think, wanted Texas A&M and Arkansas to be. I think it's right alongside that. It's just the rivalry of a past that finally is reignited. Welcome back to the show. We hate you. You hate us. Get ready to blow it out of the water.
Guys, that's going to do all for us. Appreciate you all tuning in. We had topics we didn't even get to today. Cole, we'll save them for next time. How about that? Guys, again, thank you all so much. Follow us, of course, on all social media platforms. Check out all of our content on YouTube, podcast, et cetera, secunfiltered.com. Of course, the SEC Unfiltered Hour is live right here Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern, 3 to 4 Central. And again, y'all be following along with Texas Sports Unfiltered, all the great work those guys are doing on a day-in, day-out basis. Cole, anything else? You got anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
No, but I am very profitable to be bribed on picking you as my fandom team. So go ahead and follow me on social media at Mr. Cole Thompson. Follow me on my own YouTube channel at Mr. Cole Thompson. If I get a lot of Texas followers, guess what? I will get a Texas logo shaded in the back of my head. So
the
there we go.
The man can be bought.
I am a very, very cheap date, but I am a very, very profitable one.
We love it. Guys, appreciate you all tuning in. Thank you all so much. Y'all have a great rest of your day. Stay tuned to Texas Sports Unfiltered. We'll catch you on the other side.